My name is Sharon Anderson, and in another life, I live in the Twin Cities, and I direct a leadership center at the Humphrey Institute in the University of Minnesota. And most of our work is with people like ourselves outside of the university, trying to work on a variety of sort of public and community issues. And so I'd be more than happy to talk about other projects and things I'm working on. But today what I'd like to talk about is this notion of, we were all talking about visionary leadership. How many of you participated in sort of putting together a mission statement for an organization? Has that been, or a vision, visionary leadership? We all want our leaders to have a great vision, right? We talk about people running for political office, elected offices. What's their vision? Do they have a sense of direction? What has been your experience when you've been part of a group that's written a mission statement? What was that like for you?
Well, it was hard to get your meaning in a few words.
Okay. So it was arduous.
Very.
What about some other sort of reactions or experiences? Is it fun? Did you really think after it was all done that it helped the group or the organization or the congregation really be focused? Was everybody clear on what it was? Well, what I'd like to talk about this afternoon is that's been my puzzle. I've been working in a leadership center for 13 years. And when I first started out, we started looking at a lot of the work on how to build leadership capacities. And there was a lot of evidence that people and organizations need to have a vision, they need to be focused. So I'd like to say a little bit about sort of visionary leadership. And then talk more what I think is the real challenge is how to have a shared vision. And how do we build that capacity so that we're all pulling in the same direction. There's more and more evidence that a great leader won't save us from our problems. So for an individual to have a vision isn't going to do it unless we all share in that vision. And so for a small group of people to write a bunch of words isn't going to engage all of us in the responsibility of bringing that to life. So I think when I'm working with organizations and groups and communities, that if we can't all describe in our own words what we're trying to build, we have a problem. Because then we start depending upon somebody else to tell us what we're doing. So I think a shared vision has to do with something in our mind and in our spirit, sort of knowing what we're trying to build here. Does that sound right to those of you who are doing community work or working in a congregation? See, if Holden Village, here's Holden Village mission statement. See, if we don't all know what that is, then how can we be responsible citizens in the village? Now, we not only have to know what it is, we have to believe that that's important to bring to life. Because the team that wrote that can't do it for us. I mean, together, our life in the village has to sort of bring that to life. So having said that, let me say a little bit about just visionary leadership. And we did a lot of research and looking at the literature on visions. And there are sort of two tracks. And there are lots of people and organizations, some of you have either taught them or participated in them on visionary leadership. One camp looks at vision as this notion of clarifying trends and patterns for the future direction. So it's rigorous extrapolation of facts and figures of the past in order to project the future. So statisticians help us with that work. So statistical analysis is an important skill. Trend analysis becomes an important skill. Learning how to sort of anticipate and sketch what might happen in the future given what's happening in the past. So there are any number of skills that we can build in ourselves and in others to sort of extrapolate. And so that with those, there's a set of skills and visionary skills that help us with that. John Nesbitt, who wrote Megatrends, I mean, that's one example of it. Another one would be Toffler's book, Future Shock, is another example of sort of visionary leadership through extrapolation of facts and figures. Then there's another track that does a lot of work, and that's people who describe leadership as sort of innovation, creativity, doing what's never been done before. So now, that's not necessarily extrapolation of facts and figures, but it draws on the creative side, so that skills that are taught to develop those kinds of visionary capacities might be skills, workshops on intuition, imagination, holistic thinking, creativity, understanding the nature of creativity. And it's focusing more on the process than the content of the information. And sometimes I think we get into these debates that it's either extrapolation of facts and figures or it's creativity. I happen to think that we need both. But just so you know, that a lot of the visionary leadership work sort of happens in those two sort of tracks. Now, some things that we do know, though, about visions is they need to be essentially, once we have a vision, a sense of what we want to create, then they have to be, people have to have the sense that they're ultimately doable. If you have a vision that we think is absolutely impossible to bring to life in some way, it loses energy. Another thing is that they have to be sort of authentic. It has to be true to ourselves. It can't be just a bunch of words up there that doesn't really capture the essence of who we are. It has to be really clear. Good visions, I think, visionary leadership, it sets out sort of pictures of what will we look like when we're successful. So I've worked with a lot of groups that use artists to help them sketch out. So rather than words on a page, they're pictures of what we'll look like in the future when we've done our job. That the children can describe. A lot of people work better when visions are expressed in images. But one thing that's clear about visionary leadership is that I think there's a lot of agreement that, first of all, it has to embrace the good visions, embrace the past, and things there, and that's rigorous. That means that it embraces cultural traditions, it embraces history, and different histories, people have different recollections. So for example, the village here, there are multiple histories that people have had on that have come here over long visits. But the vision has to embrace that. And it has to embrace fundamental values. It's one of the reasons why we have a hard time in the Middle East having kind of a shared sense of direction, where a lot of people and groups are on a collision path because they feel that they don't share any fundamental values together. So it embraces the past. It also embraces and wrestles with the present, which is what's really going on. If visions for the future don't really incorporate our sense of what's going on now, it's hard to get people engaged with them. And it also gives us a clear image then of what we want in the future. So that's a little bit about sort of visionary leadership. But let's do a little work on metaphors. And we've been doing more and more work in our center about metaphors because a lot of us are steeped in metaphors without knowing it. So I'm just going to ask some questions and let's kind of think together about metaphors that come to mind. What would Holden Village be like? What would a village be like if its vision was that of a gift? What are the qualities of a gift? So Holden is like a gift. Let's say our vision's like a gift. What would it be like? What are gifts like?
Free.
Okay, what else?
Something we treasure.
We treasure.
Surprises.
It has surprises.
A purpose.
Future.
It has a future. Say a little bit about that in terms of a gift. Oh, a gift for the future?
Well, a gift of what you're going to do with it. You have to have an idea of what you're going to do with this gift.
Okay.
You can't just...
Usually unconditional.
Okay.
Excited.
Okay. What about good, do you ever have a sense of good gifts and bad gifts?
Yeah.
So then it might embrace that. There are some gifts that are better than other gifts. Right? So, I mean, we have to look at all sides of it.
Carries with it responsibility to do something with it.
Okay. But do you see, that would be a vision of the village, as the village is like a gift. So there's good news and bad news. There's sort of big things and little things. What gifts are wrapped in different packages, right? That's one metaphor. Now, what would the village be like if it was like a market? How do markets work? A market is an
buying and selling.
Okay, so it's like an exchange, buying and selling, deal making.
Competition.
Supplies what people want or need.
Okay, so it's a supply demand. We do a lot of thinking about what is the cost and what are the benefits, right, in markets. And that's a metaphor that a lot of us use a lot. It's around us a lot. And so cost-benefit analysis, supply and demand.
Making something attractive so that it will sell, perhaps neglecting.
Okay.
Promotion.
Okay, so you got a market.
Promotion.
And you got to advertise certain things.
Advertising.
Okay. So does that give you a sense of the metaphor of the market? Now, what about if Holden was like a body? Like a body.
Many members.
So it has different members, different parts?
Different talents.
Different talents?
It's tired.
It gets tired. Okay.
Functional.
It's functional.
It needs food.
Okay. How about it gets sick? Or parts of it get sick?
Right.
What about, would you rather be the toenail or the heart? I mean, then you see how sometimes when we think of our, we have these the picture of sort of when it works like a body, there's sort of good news and bad news in that, right? Because then some parts, you know, are more valuable than other parts. So, but sometimes we describe communities in the body metaphor. We think in our mind that it should work like a body. What about if Holden were like a systems of ups and downs? Having to do with power. So what about, it would be like organizing, negotiating, politics. And a lot of organizations, a lot of advocacy organizations work out of the metaphors of ups and downs, the haves and the have-nots.
Well, doesn't every organization have its ups and downs?
Uh-huh. And I'm not saying one or the other, but sometimes these metaphors, Bob Sherry's done some work that suggests that these are metaphors that a lot of organizations kind of think about. So oppressed groups often frame things in terms of their sensitivity and knowledge about power and inequities of power. What about if Holden were like a journey? How would you describe Holden if it were like a journey?
Long and short.
Okay.
Forward and backwards.
Okay.
A beginning and an end.
Okay.
It's in the mountain, it's got switchbacks.
Okay.
Discovery.
Discovery.
Direction.
Okay.
Compass.
And a lot of things are described in the journey metaphor. A lot of people think about it's more how we treat each other on the journey than it is the destination. And we start thinking that you never arrive. A lot of congregations see their work in the journey metaphor. And so it's about being there, it's about caring. What about if Holden were like art? How does art work? Creativity.
Has many colors.
Dimension, many colors. Aesthetics. So can you see how metaphors sometimes can be helpful tools to getting us to think about our visions? I suggest one thing, that if some of you are doing work in organizations where you're working on vision, you may want to ask a group, think of a metaphor that describes our current organization. I was working with a university recently, and the faculty in the university, and they described their university currently, the way some things were going, as kind of a demolition derby, where they were having a lot of collisions. And then have the group think about what would you look like if you were successful in sort of transforming your organization or your group, or what's your vision? What's the metaphor that might describe your vision of the organization in the future? And it's interesting to me how many groups and organizations use metaphors out of nature to describe kind of their hope for sense of what they would look like. And they have all sorts of ways to describe that. But I happen to think that metaphors are a helpful tool to get us thinking about vision. I also think that, and I understand, this was in the bookstore, and I think it's coming in. John, do you know what's coming in again?
I've had some miscommunication over this particular one. I'm going to have to write. I'll be writing tomorrow. So I hope it'll be in a couple of weeks. And we have a list of people we wanted.
Okay.
So if people could let me know when I'm writing, then I'll have to be ordering.
Okay. This is a book that was written at a center at Northwestern, and it's called Building Communities from the Inside Out. And I think that I also like it as a framework, not only for just building communities, but also for building, I think it's quite appropriate as well, to think about organizations. And have some of you worked with strategic planning and sort of model of strategic planning? This offers a complementary framework to the framework that you understand in strategic planning. But I think it's also helpful in sort of creating a richer vision, shared vision, of what we want to create. And it's really a workbook. I'll leave it here if some of you want to take a look at it. But it's really hands-on. It lays out how to get people and organizations, different sectors working together, and a lot of very practical tools. But I think they did a really nice job. But let me just share with you kind of the essence of what they think about in this book and some of the things that I think are important and may be helpful for you. Did you see this? This comes out of a book also called The Leadership Challenge. And they, the two authors do a lot of work primarily in the private sector. But I think they do they've done a lot of research asking people about their personal bests. So when people think back in their experience, how to capture their personal best. And they say a lot about the future. And so a lot of us wish that sort of it'll just happen or somebody else will figure it out. But they both believe that there's a lot of work to be done in sort of creating or co-creating our future sense of direction. But I wanted to share with you a framework. Oh, didn't hurt.
If it doesn't stay, you can hook it over the leg of the chair.
Okay. Well, maybe this is this down low enough? Annie, am I going to get it?
Let me stop.
You have to know the tricks.
Yeah.
Thank you. You stay long enough and you get the program.
It's like any old house.
Thank you. Can you see that?
Yeah.
I'll describe it to you. This side is the traditional way that a lot of people have been taught to do strategic planning in organizations or groups. And what it says is the first thing you have to do is you have to focus on what are the needs or the problems of the organization. Does that sound familiar? And then the next thing you do is you do a needs assessment, and that's a tool. And it's done in a lot of ways, but what do we really need here? Right? And then the next thing you look at is you set up a system or programs or a variety of things then to say, well, how are we going to address those needs? And then there are some who feel that really then, and a lot of people feel, and some of the work on building shared visions comes out of the sense that we've developed a set of sort of professionals and experts then that do have responsibility to help us address some of the problems and needs. And so in the United States particularly, there's a lot of professionalism. One of my colleagues did a lot of work on the hospice movement and traced it historically from, it used to be the community did the hospice work. And now in most communities, hospice work is done by professionals. And organizations are worried about lawsuits of having families come in and do the work. But essentially then, in strategic planning, oftentimes the programs are run by experts and professionals. And you set up these systems where you have consumers and staff. So you have clients and professionals. And that's part of what jump-started the people at Northwestern to start thinking of, is there a complementary model that we might use? And I think it's a helpful model in visionary work and building a shared vision, particularly in communities, particularly in situations where we're dealing with issues that are more complex and go beyond just one organization. So for example, the work of a congregation goes beyond really the work of that congregation, right? I mean, it often goes other than sort of the day-to-day organization of the congregation, but a lot of issues that the church deals with goes way beyond the institutionalized church. So like those of you from Burnsville, you have a lot of things in common with the other churches in the community. So this book in Building Communities, its reason it's called Building Communities from the Inside Out, but it's also, I think, used in a lot of shared vision work, is it says, no, we not only have to look at what the problems are, but we have to really do some work on what we want to build. So you see, that's the question of what do we want to build here? That's the vision question. And I happen to believe sometimes that it gives us some fresh ideas other than just what the problems are. Sometimes when we only focus on the problems, we lose our sort of ideas for new things that we want to build that aren't necessarily related to the problems at hand. So it asks, what do we want to build? Or it focuses on what do we want to produce here? So these are often the questions of shared visions, right? When you get a group together and you start asking people, what do we really want to produce? What does it look like? What are we really trying to build here? To get a sense of the picture. Not writing a mission statement where we mince with words, but getting people to really dialogue about different ideas about what are we trying to build here. Then what we do is, and a friend of mine, Karen Lehman, did a lot of this work with peasant networks in Mexico. But we then say, well, if this is what we want to build, let's assess our capacities. So if part of the short-term vision of Holden Village is to have some new buildings, I mean, we have to build a new, a garage?
Garage.
The new garage. Holden needs a new garage.
And one more.
Okay. Box. Now, do you see how you can have a picture of that in your mind? Everybody can remember what that is. Everybody in the community can start brainstorming a little bit, well, how might I help with that? So, you know what we want to build now. Now, let's assess our capacities. So let's go to everybody and say, what can you do? And try to figure out what skills people have that'll help us build that garage. So now, let's say we've got a lot of things, but we don't have some good carpenters. So then what do we have to do? We have to build some networks, or we have to build an association with somebody who can help us build that capacity, right? Or we might network with somebody who can teach us how to do that. So that's where I think we do skill building and leadership work. It's not just any skill, and let's have a leadership program. But let's first figure out what we want to build. Let's assess our current capacities as opposed to just general capacity audits. Then we can figure out specifically where we need to build capacities in order to produce what we had in mind. So we've actually worked in regions of Mexico and regions of the United States where we've really tried to work with communities and regions to assess their capacities to do certain things. and then I figure out where they need to learn some new things in order to accomplish their work that they set out to do. But it's a different tool than it is to do a needs assessment. But it's a capacity-based model. So then what we're trying to do is to develop some internal responsibility for our own work. Not thinking, so we hold the experts accountable to teach us, as opposed to be in charge of us, and then we depend on them. But it becomes our shared responsibility. Then if we know we want to build a garage, if we bring in an expert, we direct their work to help us. So we have shared responsibility to produce this. So then we become partners, side-by-side partners, in getting the work done. But we essentially then what we're saying and what they're saying in this book is it's built on a model of sort of local problem solving, local responsibility. So if some of you are looking for sort of a resource or a way to think about that, I suggest that. But I also think that this has a lot to do with and has given me a lot of help in thinking about tools then to build a shared vision. Okay, comments. Does anybody have a question or a comment?
Just you have to know what you need in order to determine what your capacity is in a given area. So I'm not sure, maybe you can say a few words about how you determine that.
How it determines capacities?
The idea of building a garage. We need a garage. But first you have to understand that you need a garage. Well, maybe you have vehicles that are in need of housing and so forth.
Right.
That in itself is a needs assessment.
So, well, or to set some priorities. Uh-huh. And that's why I say they, I think they complement each other.
Okay, I understand.
Okay.
So then once you understand what your need is, your desires, then you try to understand what your capacities are.
But there are also examples where we have sort of a vision of what this place would look like if it were successful. It's not really seen as kind of a need, but it was like a dream for success. Now I should also say, John?
So in working with communities as you have, how do, do you personally present the dream, or do the people from the community present the dream? And then how do they present it to the community?
So how do we build this shared vision? I'm not an expert. My job is often as a coach and a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning and working and really trying to figure out how I can be better at that, because I'm convinced that communities and groups and organizations have to craft their own vision. It's just like this quote, there's no answer. And we have to design it together. I've worked with a lot, we've done some, my colleagues in the center, two of my colleagues in the center are professors of planning in the Humphrey Institute. And they're planning theorists. And so a lot of their work says a lot of strategic planning is not successful. About 80% of it. So a lot of the mission statements and all of those other things, we go into a lot of communities and a lot of organizations and we ask them what their mission is or their vision is, and they say, just a minute, I have to go look it up.
Right, yeah.
Okay. We are not going to do a good job of bringing it to life if we don't know it in our own mind's eye. So that everybody in the village needs to know the mission here if we're going to be successful in bringing it to life. And we all have to, for ourselves, have to figure out, how am I going to contribute to that? How am I, what am I going to do all the time to help bring that to life?
Does this build side include the method or what, some detail about what you're going to have to do to start with, and this is what we expect to have done by a certain time, timetable, that all has to do. Where it's not in the needs assessment side, it's
right
here. And
right.
Here's what you got to do to get this done.
Right. Let me share a few things that I've been learning about sort of patterns that are emerging as I've had a chance to work with a lot of different groups. It's kind of how do we do that. And let me tell you, I'll give you an example that I've currently been working on for about 6 months. And because I'm a partner in this, they sort of networked with me. And so we're sort of co-creating and trying to sort of stir this pot a little bit. But the city of Minneapolis has doing some work, and we've sort of the city has decided to divide itself into 86 neighborhoods. Okay? And we put up some public dollars by all the major institutions, the schools, the county, the city, the library board, let's see, the parks, human services, social services, but are also funded through the county. But a lot of the major institutions have said, well, in order for the city of Minneapolis to sort of work right, all the major institutions have to start working together. We don't really have a clue how to do that. I mean, these are big bureaucracies, you know, and the schools don't really plan with the libraries. They have different boards of elected. It's very difficult to do that. So they came to us and they said, why don't you work with us? Let's try to do some community, we want to build sort of, do some leadership work in the city. So the city, if we go around and interview citizens in the city, say, what's the vision for the city of Minneapolis? It's like, I don't have a clue. And we have, but what we're finding as we started working with all these neighborhoods is that there are hundreds of visions for our city. And a lot of them are on a demolition derby course. So in communities, there's a lot of infighting, not because we don't have a vision, but we have lots of visions, and people perceive that we have limited resources. And so there's not peace in the village. So we're trying to work on that. So what we're beginning to see is that if you see this arrow down here is the city of Minneapolis, and you see all these arrows running at cross purposes? What we're trying to do, I think, about building a shared vision is not reducing everything to the lowest common denominator, having consensus, and which we often do when we do vision work, because we sort of like narrow it down and it loses all the interesting stuff for most of us, and we have winners and losers. I think what we have to do is learn how to weave. And we have to learn how to take all of these visions within the neighborhoods and within these bureaucracies and somehow create a mural to get them in alignment. So it's like, and the metaphor out of nature, I think, is when you have ducks flying in formation, where they're in alignment. They're not sort of crashing into each other. So then, let me just say a little bit about some themes, I think, as I tried to think about, well, how are we doing that and what are we learning? First of all, I think there's a lot of evidence that we have, in this work, we have to recognize that we have stated missions and we have real missions. Now, let me tell you what I think a stated mission is, something that's clear, it's formal. This is the stated mission of Holden Village. And a lot of organizations, a lot of communities have those. Within that you can't see is the real mission. And that's the hopes and dreams of every single person in the village. And those are often hidden agendas. So that when you go into a meeting and you think you have the agenda for the meeting, but all of a sudden you feel like you're crazy, it's the hidden agendas that are coming out, because each of us as citizens in a village also have our personal missions. And so we're always trying to bring those to the table. That's human nature, because those are important things to us, each. So I think building a shared vision then has to recognize that there's both an institutional vision or an organizational vision or a community vision or a group vision. But there's also individual visions that need to be put in alignment. So shared vision work is making sure we have some sort of common ground, that some of our sort of hopes and dreams are in alignment with each other. We have to like each other. You know, see, I don't think building a shared vision in the city of Minneapolis, getting everybody to like each other. But it's recognizing that we have some common space, some common ground, and how to sort of work that peacefully through alignment. So it would be as though we took Holden's mission statement here But then we went around and interviewed each one of you to say, if your visit to Holden is successful, what would have happened? Describe that when you leave the village. So if you have a good stay in Holden, what would it look like when you leave? And we took all of those things and say, well, now can we put those in alignment? Okay? Now, they're not the same thing, but they have to work in harmony with each other. So see, can they live, can they coexist? And I think sometimes when we don't do that, we sort of get into trouble. So I think building shared visions then has to do with trying to get some of those ideas in alignment with each other. So it creates some direction by telling the organization or the individuals more about what we care about and what we want to accomplish together. It gives focus to everybody. See, it's not just somebody coming in and telling us what the vision of the place is. We have to co-create it.
It looks like they would have a lot of pitfalls along the way, people coming in and dropping
out. Exactly, exactly.
I don't want to do this, but I'll
right.
do this.
So what does that tell us about shared vision work? It's ongoing. It never ends. I mean, I think it has to be a way of life in a community, a way of life in an organization. It's an ongoing dialogue. You're absolutely right that too often we sort of get the vision up there and then we have to do that anymore.
Somebody else's pet project
right.
is going to tramp on mine.
That's right. That's right. But then shared vision work sort of enhances communication because it gives us things to talk about together, about sort of our common journey, the common path that we're taking. It helps us, I think, be much more proactive rather than reactive. It helps us get about producing and being proactive for what we're trying to create together rather than whining about what doesn't work right here. Because see, we're in this process, I think, what I'm experiencing is that it allows us to create some shared ownership. And I saw this when I had a chance to work with our center hosted with superintendents of schools in the metropolitan area of Minneapolis. We met for 5 years. We had a seminar series over 5 years, and all the superintendents in the metropolitan area spent a day a month at our center for dialogue. And we really tried to stand back, and it was really a dialogue on what are the big issues, what's going on in the world, and how should that relate to public education. And the intent, what we thought when we put that together, would give them all a chance to begin thinking about collective leadership. What can superintendents of schools do together that they can't do as individuals in school districts? So what's some shared responsibility? And what, after about 3 years, I said to them, you know, what have you done? And they began to see that they were getting sort of into this whiny thing, like, well, the legislature doesn't set the rules up right, or we don't have enough money. Or it was always kind of whiny, and for good reason. But they felt like they were reactive. Somebody was always making the rules wrong, or somebody was always setting the system up wrong. And so by thinking about their own shared vision and what they might do to create it, they actually were very successful in about a year and a half of working with a variety of people, writing some legislation, and getting major funding set aside in Minnesota to do more work on desegregation of our schools and dealing with some issues in that area. But it got them off what's wrong and whining and complaining and having great consensus about how it wasn't working right and on to what they were trying to do. And they were a lot more energetic. So I think that we all need to sort of experience and experiment more and share kind of work that we're doing to help create and build shared visions. And a lot of places, I think, that there are a lot of resources in this area that are much more informal. A lot of circles in churches where people come together and they create a quilt together. You know, I think it's really interesting. They have discussions about what it'll look like when it's finished. They have a lot of discussions about the colors that they're going to use. They have discussions about who can do certain stitches. And they assess their capacities. And they know what they're going to produce. And they work together on producing it. And they find people to help them when they run into trouble. So I think there are a lot of sort of models out there that we can draw on to help us do a better job at this. So then, let me just relate this to some of the things that I'm thinking about in terms of, because I work in a leadership center and I'm often working with people in groups that come to us to develop leadership programs, is that the way some of this shared vision work then begins to get me thinking differently is that we need to build capacities very intentionally. And that's not just any kind of capacity. That's why I think we're wrong when we try to do, say, youth leadership programs, and we develop those programs based on who knows what kind of list of skills. But I think we have to start talking to our youth to say, what are they trying to build in their shorter to longer term future, and then help them build some skills that will help them lead that effort forward. And the reason being is that we know that leadership has all sorts of styles. There are any number of instruments that will help us measure our style of leadership. Some of you have taken the Myers-Briggs personality inventory, there are just any number of assessment instruments that help us assess our style. There are thousands of skills that we can learn. I mean, literally thousands of skills. And there are all sorts of qualities. I mean, we could talk about and make a huge list of thinking of all the great leaders that we've known, either dead or alive, and list their skills and their qualities. And there are just hundreds. What we know is that nobody has them all. And so I would argue that we need to align then building our capacities with our visions, rather than sort of building capacities and hope that it'll fit with our vision. Now, that's also being done in some rural communities where there have been a lot of capacity building initiatives, where we're finding that people came in, they liked the work that they did, they learned a lot, but somehow it's not being applied back into the communities or the organizations that they're working in. And so more and more I'm thinking that the heart of some of our work needs to be much more rigorous and intentional about building a shared vision. And then once we get that down, that gives us a lot of direction on how we need to build our own capacities and that of others. And without that, it's just like a needle in a haystack in terms of which things we start building. Does anybody have a comment, or does that sound right, given your experiences? How many of you have gone to a workshop or a conference and done something, but it never really fit with your work when you got home, so you never really used it? You've got all your notes, you've experienced that? So, and it's that disjoint, and I think that time is precious. And so I resist just creating leadership programs and then inviting you all come. Because my experience is that it doesn't link back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit on a very good point on follow-up. As you say, a lot of us have done that. And I thought a lot about that. Why did that three-ring binder go up on my credenza? Mm-hmm. And it sat there, never to open again. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought I was putting in fantastic notes. Mm-hmm. For growth of the company or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as I thought of that, the issue here is the right people to be at those seminars. And too many of those seminars or those leadership sessions I've gone to is, I said, oh, I wish the CEO was here. Or, oh, that vice president should be hearing what I'm hearing. And that, I think, is the key to the success of anybody spending the money to have an organization like yours come in. Because it goes on deck, it doesn't run right here.
So if it's not shared, then
that's
you
right.
Just said, and I have learned the hard way. I have gone in and worked with middle managers and worked with them on vision things without. Long ago, I mean, it's not recently, but in the past, I think I've learned from my mistakes, at least I've tried to, where I've gone in and worked with very good intentions of designing some work for, say, middle managers or citizens in a community, where I haven't involved the sort of positional leaders. And too often, they can put up barriers. And then it just frustrates everybody. And it's not that they're not good people, but that it somehow these initiatives have to be more closely woven together and shared. So getting back and using this example, the city of Minneapolis. And
I'm going to ask a question about the city of Minneapolis. Is the mayor and high officials in this with you?
So, well, let me tell you how we kind of got into this, because I have this notion that we work on by invitation, so we wait to be invited as a partner. And so we got this call, and then we spent 6 months talking with people in neighborhoods, talking with a variety of people about kind of what they're trying, what they want. And what's happened and what's come out of that then is that we've sort of agreed to sort of try this out in terms of working to build a shared vision or weaving together or creating a mural of what would the city of Minneapolis look like in 10 years. What's our vision of that? What's our shared vision of that? And what we're going to do is the plan is we're going to work with neighborhood people for a year because they've got some things that agenda items that they're working on. First of all, they're working on there's some kind of shared power issues where some of the neighborhoods want to work on dealing with utilizing their conflict, not pushing it away, but part of their strength as a neighborhood is they don't agree on a lot of things. So they want to do some work there. They want to do some organizational work and some political work to give voice to their own visions. Because oftentimes, high-level and positional elected officials are pretty articulate. They're smooth. They've had a lot of practice in sort of giving voice to their ideas. And so if you're going to bring people together, you've got to make sure that everybody is prepared to kind of give voice to their vision equally. So some of the neighborhoods want to work on that over the year. And then we also have agreement from and the mayor, the county commissioners, a variety of sort of elected officials and senior administrators in Hennepin County and Minneapolis have also agreed to participate and would like to participate. And what we're going to do is we're going to host and put together a series of initiatives to actually sit down and work together and try to weave together this art piece of a shared vision for the city. So it's a working session over a period of time. And there are some good resources that I wanted to share with you about that work. One is this book called The Search Conference. Another, there's some book out called The Future Search. Another one called Discovering Common Ground. But there are a number of people, and also Peter Senge wrote a book called The Fifth Discipline. And the subtitle is The Art of a Learning Organization. A lot of people have read that. It's pretty popular. Most of that research was done in the private sector. But the subtitle of that is The Art of a Learning Organization. Some of you are familiar with learning organizations. But there are a lot of people who are beginning to now sort of say, well, this vision work is very complex, very difficult. And so there are a lot of different people who are sort of inventing tools. And I think you have to create one that works right for you, but I think there are a number. So this book has a lot of ideas about how to sort of build communities from the inside out using a lot of perspectives and ideas. This is another one. But let me just share with you the process of something like this, or an example of what they're suggesting here. And it really gets people talking then about their different visions. But one way that you might do this, and this is just an example that comes out of this and some other, you might bring together people and you spend some time looking at history. Remember we talked about good visions incorporate and embrace the history? So you would, some of the things that we've done is have people draw timelines, three different historical timelines. One is having people really define out their own personal histories, what's happened in their own personal lives and histories. Another one is taking a look then at, so that you come up with a picture of the personal histories of the people in the room. Usually these are, in Minneapolis we'll probably have 125 people that will represent different groups, neighborhood groups, elected officials and so forth. Looking at sort of the timeline of participants in the room. Also, they'll build a timeline of what's going on, the history of the world as they see it. And then one will be of the history, a 30-year timeline of the city of Minneapolis. And we'll get some help for them with that. But they see the historical perspective, because the future doesn't happen in the absence of the history. And there's a lot of richness in that. So what we're trying to do is get everybody working together on the same planet to begin to see they have different histories, very different cultures. But to also make sure that everybody knows that it's there, everybody's information is pertinent and absolutely essential. And everybody has a story to tell. So we have to do some work on that. The next thing then is that the group has to create kind of a map of what that current reality looks like. So everybody then starts working to identify current issues and trends and actions that they believe are affecting, say in this case, sort of the future of Minneapolis. But it's a working session, and you get people who understand that differently in the room and know that and have studied that differently. And then use a process to cluster those ideas. You don't vote them down, you weave them together. Then the next thing that we do is that we get people working together that have similar issues and similar stakes. So out of that, you cluster a lot of different ideas, and then you can cluster people in the room, or in this case, over a period of time, you start putting together, you network people to work on issues of common concern. Do you see how that, it's not narrowing things down, it's opening it up. It's divergent thinking rather than convergent thinking. And in the past, I think we've done a lot of vision work that is convergent. But I think the complexity of the issues today need us to be more divergent in the way that we approach things. So we're trying to get people working more by interest area. Then what we do is, there's over time there's a lot of energy that starts building, and it's not just head energy but also sort of emotional energy. And so there's opportunities. I think it's important to get people then talking about in their own histories and the work they've done that relate to these things that they're talking about, issues, things that they're proud of and things that they're sorry about. And people have a lot. So you draw on that wisdom. That's learning from your lessons of experience. It's learning from what works right for you, but also learning from what didn't work or wasn't, we didn't do. And we talk a lot about that as a resource, but we're trying to figure out a way. And I think some of the ways to then build a shared vision can incorporate those things in. Then what we do is after that, then we start having people say, well, let's shuffle the deck, So we've had people working for a period of time on special interest groups, but now it's time to start weaving this vision for the future. We start mixing people up, both positional and non-positional, to start developing scenarios of ideally, say, what would the city look like in 10 years? Not only that, but what programs would they envision being in place? What kind of work would be going on? And what would they anticipate being the results of work that's absolutely essential? They also start talking a lot, oftentimes, and you get lots of good ideas about not only the work they envision, but we also ask them to keep track of things that they think will be barriers to that. Because then part of their work will be pretty intentional removal of those barriers. See, and that's what we often forget, is that we have to be, part of our work is to remove barriers that are going to get in our way. And then we ask people, and we get groups working on very creative ways then to bring their working team's information back and draw on creativity. I just did this with a group of people from all over the world. I did a workshop, a week-long workshop, for about 200 people from 107 countries around the world, including a team from the Middle East. So, and they're working, you know, it's very difficult to think of a shared vision in the Middle East. And a lot of these people are literally enemies to each other. So we invited them to come back and present their ideas in very creative ways. And nobody ever comes in with flip charts with a bunch of bullets on it. I mean, there's a lot of humor, there's a lot of acting, a lot of the arts come in, but we're trying to figure out ways to kind of people to bring their ideas, to have a spirit about them, rather than sort of everything in their heads. But inviting groups then to come back and report, but in creative ways. And then out of that, then there's a plan. See, that process then sets things up to then begin to develop action plans. So that my role in this is more of sort of an orchestrator and a facilitator and a catalyst and helping everybody else to be involved. Now, this is work of shared vision rather than, well, when's our president going to set the right vision for the United States? Right? Or when's the CEO? Or when's the mayor? Or when is government? Or when is the village going to get it right? But it's trying to figure out a way to really have everybody participate and share the responsibility and sort of bringing to life. First of all, we have to figure out what it is we want to bring to life together. And then engage ourselves and make commitments to do that in appropriate ways. So that's what I think is something about sort of the work of shared vision and sort of getting focused. And I think it can be done. I've seen it done, and I've seen individual organizations work on it. I've seen neighborhoods work on it. I've seen large groups and small groups work on it. But I think we need to learn a lot more. I think we need a lot more creative work. But that's what I think visionary leadership needs to be about. It's much more collective, much more participatory. And so writing a mission statement's a good step. But I think after we do that, we need to always be working on sort of creating this shared vision that we can articulate in our own words and describe our own role in that.
Mm-hmm. Give me, if you would take a minute, take a congregation. Mm-hmm. And a congregation comes to your group and says, as you said, needed to be invited. And they want to decide that they need a mission statement. That's all they know they need. They need a vision. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all they know. They've mm-hmm. read about it. That's it. Mm-hmm. Take me through, real quickly, if you will, the procedure that you would do with something like that. you're talking about all of these little neighborhoods out here and all of these people. What type of questions or what type of data are you really trying to get from this far base?
Yeah.
To come in, for example, on a congregation?
Well, I worked with a congregation recently where that question came up. I mean, a lot of people in the United States, and first of all, I should say, I didn't say when I started, but visionary leadership work is very culturally based. A lot of cultures in the world aren't. The United States is one of the most forward-looking cultures in the world. I mean, to a fault sometimes. I think that sometimes we're so future-focused that we aren't here now for each other. Okay, I think we're losing some of our children in this country because we're so busy working on the future that we're not here on the present. So that I think it's important to kind of think about that vision work is maybe to a certain extent too much of a good thing, gets us in trouble. I had one of my colleagues 2 years ago come into my office and say, you know, Sharon, I think this vision stuff is really Christian. She happened to be from the Philippines. And she said, I've been thinking about it, but she said, you know, I really believe that if we're here for each other 100% now, that I trust that the future will work out the way we need it to. She said, that's the way I was raised. We don't need to be working on, but we need to care for each other now and be here for each other now and have some faith that it'll work out right in the future, which is interesting, but just keep that in mind because I think sometimes we're always out there and we don't have time for each other right now in the present. You know, some cultures are based in the past. So history and tradition and so... In the United States, we do a lot of work on vision. Maybe we need to do more work on some of those other areas. But having said that, I think getting people, I would suggest, before they decide they want to write a mission statement, make sure that focus is the problem in their congregation. It's the issue in the congregation, maybe. So I suggest they start visiting about it, having a dialogue perhaps after services on Sunday, where you get members to talk about their visions of the church and just record. So there are any number of things that you can start getting people talking about. What are your hopes for this congregation? Some ideas that if we're a successful congregation in the next 5 years, what'll be going on? And getting people to talk about that. And so sometimes it's not a mission. Maybe there's a lot of consensus about that, and the board and, you know, churches have their own art. Maybe there's a lot of agreement, but maybe it's that people, there's a lot of infighting, and it's the way people are relating to each other, not what you're trying to do the same thing, but you have different ideas of getting there. So usually I like to have conversations and get organizations or groups starting to talk about what's going on before we sort of decide, well, let's have an extensive sort of vision process. So.
Okay, so you've got the community talking at this point, and you are recording this, if I understand correctly.
Or they can record it themselves.
Yeah, okay. Take me from there. Where do you go from there? I've got all this data.
Well,
most
congregations have some sort of mission statement. A lot of congregations today in the United States have mission statements.
Okay.
So sometimes they need to be dusted out and brought out because they were written a long time ago, revised, changed. I understand this one's been changed 3 times. So they need to be, and out in front of everybody, and then maybe try to incorporate more people. And I can talk, we can maybe have dinner together sometime or go for a walk, and I can talk to you more about that. But it's not, mission isn't always the problem, if you will, if we go on the planning, you know, how do you build a plan for this? but I'm just saying that I think there are some nice new resources out there that give us some fresh ideas about building a shared vision rather than what was pretty popular for a long time, which is the great heroic notion of leadership, which is let's find a leader that'll come in here with a vision and save us from ourselves. And I'm convinced that we have to have a shared sense of direction, and we have to assume shared responsibility. And what's going on in our world, in our communities, in our organizations today take all of us. And that we all need to sort of bring our gifts to the table and contribute. And so a lot of the visionary work, I think, is a weaving process to sort of get that organized. And part of that is figuring out who we are as individuals and our individual missions and aligning that with our organization, our community. Because sometimes we don't feel like we're part of the same community. I mean, in Minneapolis, some of our neighborhoods feel like other neighborhoods are from outer space. You know, so we can't have a community vision until we figure out that we have some common ground and a common purpose that we kind of want to share together in the same agenda. Well, I've gone 5 minutes over. I'm sorry. Thank you for coming. And for some of you who are sort of interested in talking about this, I'd be more than happy to visit with you a little bit more. I'm leaving the vision, the village tomorrow, but I also would be happy to correspond, or I can give you my card or whatever. But thank you.